Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with disabilities musician Sam Leopold. So tell me a little bit about your background in disabilities music.
I started maybe about 10 years ago or so. I was in Japan, and I had been a musician when I was young, but I was in my 50s, and I was looking to get back into music, and I got an opportunity to work in a high school teaching children's songwriting, teenager songwriting, and I liked it a lot. And then a couple years later, we moved to Australia, and I was given an opportunity to work with people with disabilities, and I just went again and did songwriting with them, and as a way of talking about life and talking about situations and things like that, turning them into songs. And and I enjoyed that a lot. When we moved back to America in 2006, I just started doing it, and I got hired by different agencies. And that's how I started.
So, in your work, what type of disability have you most commonly seen?
Well, I work with all levels of disability, but mostly there are people who have disabilities that we used to, that their challenge is more mental, emotional, and less overtly physical. So, although I do work with various conditions, I guess I get a little bit of all different types of disabilities, frankly. But I think I define that pretty broadly. So that might be a teenager with emotional problems, or it might be someone who was born from a drug-dependent mother who had some profound neurological disabilities. So I think I get a whole range.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the teaching methods you use when there is an emotional disability?
Well, what I do is I try to draw the person out. With an emotional disability, I would be, most of my experience is with teenagers, and my method is to draw them out, feel comfortable speaking about issues in their lives, and take those issues, turn them into something with rhyme and meter and imagination, and try to make that into a song to objectify the issue. It's like making a painting and putting it on a wall. You look at it and it's no longer in you. You're looking at it outside of you, and you see it as something larger than yourself. I find that I think what I'm doing with a person with an emotional disability is just encouraging them to and helping them to see that their disability, the problems arising from their disability, are maybe not so are somewhat universal. And if you just kind of switch around, take a look at it in another way, hear it with a melody or something like that, it turns out to be something that doesn't really even belong to you entirely. It's something that's right out there in the world, and you can look at it and then feel somewhat more comfortable with it, is my hope.
So, in your time working in disabilities music, is there any one success moment stands out for you?
I have them every day. For example, yesterday, or every Thursday afternoon, I worked with a group of young people who I've been seeing twice a month for maybe 7 years. So they were really young children when I began working with them. And now this group is, a couple of them have even gone into the work world now, you know, so they've graduated from high school. And so to have gone through situations where they have just totally ignored me, completely, you know, been so disruptive, been, you know, used our class time as an opportunity to torment each other, you know, to do everything else, to a time now 6 years later when we all know what we're about, what we're going to do for the next hour, and we're sitting, you know, quietly, we're listening, we're working together. This is really thrilling for me, you know, to see something that has taken 6 or 7 years. It helps me know that, you know, with just about anybody, it might take 6 or 7 years, but it's very, very fulfilling. What else can I say?
So, if you could send any one message about the importance of disabilities in music, what would it be?
The importance of disabilities in music, or do you mean to say the importance of music in working with disabilities?
Yes.
Because I could look at it either way.
A little
bit. In music, for example. Now, this might sound a little strange, but this is my where I come from. As a musician, you never really arrive. You never get all of the knowledge, skill, ability to express yourself as deeply as you wish. You're always learning more and developing more. In a way, you could see that as a disability. We're, as musicians, always overcoming the next challenge. You know, right now I'm studying flute, where the finger positions are very, very wide. You know, my fingers are not that wide. I have to keep, you know, I have to do exercises to push my fingers apart so I can play these scales on this flute. Well, that's a disability I'm working to overcome, you know. So my small fingers are the diving board from which I dive off into, you know, improving or creating something or communicating something to someone. All that, it's all coming out of a challenge, you know, that I meet. It's maybe a stretch to call that a disability. But, you know, so on the other hand, if you mean to say the role that music can play in working with disabilities, I think that's evident in that today, especially today, music plays such an important role in society in every way. So it's from socializing, you know, from becoming, I don't mean socializing for fun, although socializing for fun is important too, but to become social, you know, music can work as a thread in the social fabric in which we communicate with each other and we understand each other. I don't know. Am I being clear, Cam?
Absolutely.
Like
to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Music can have great impact on a person with a disability, just as it can on anyone else in society. Fact is, individuals with disabilities have a lot to contribute as far as culture, ideas, innovations. Music is no exception. It's work like Sam's that's taking it further, saying, what can we do to best represent the lives of individuals with disabilities, but not only to ensure they're represented in music, to give them a chance to express the things that matter most to them. Music is the language of the soul, or so they say. But the fact of the matter is, individuals with disabilities should be as represented in music as any other group. They each have a great story to share. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HANDILINK, the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. We'll be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Don't feel alone. The Distress Center provides free, anonymous and confidential, caring and emotional support, referrals, crisis intervention, and suicide prevention by specially trained volunteers. They're open from noon to midnight. Sometimes talking does help. So call 519-256-5000.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from disabilities music expert Sam Leopold. This segment of our show, we'll hear from a musician who was born deaf, was able to find his hearing with the help of an implant. Please welcome the disabilities musician known as Daly. So tell me a little bit about your story.
Well, my story is a little bit different than most performing artists. One of the reasons why it definitely takes like a turn for different is myself. I was actually born deaf, born without the ability to hear. It wasn't until I actually had implants put in to drain the actual fluid within my ears until I was actually able to clearly hear and to understand. Pretty much for me, that kind of helped define a little bit of my life. It was a very traumatic moment for not only myself, but also for my parents. Like even the discovery of me being hearing impaired, that wasn't by doctors. It wasn't really like they confirmed it, but my parents found it out by my mom was just one day in the kitchen, just doing the pots and pans, washing some dishes, and she ended up dropping a pan on the floor. Now, the pan, you know, kind of scared her and startled her. She looked over, and I was in my high chair, and she noticed that I didn't have any reaction whatsoever because I was pointed the other direction. She kind of got worried, called my dad. My dad came home, and they started pretty much you know, redoing the accidental experiment over and over again until pretty much every pot and pan and dish was pretty much smashed on the ground. They kind of looked at each other and realized that, you know, my life was probably going to be a little bit different.
So, how has this influenced your work as you've matured?
Well, it's definitely influenced my work as, especially as I got older. Myself, I do the hip-hop rap game, and when I first came out, I was doing a lot of battles and a lot of freestyles, so to be honest with you, I tried to even hide the fact that I had any kind of hearing impairment. The last thing that I really wanted to hear rapping against someone trying to, you know, stay strong and be in the moment is something about me being deaf or dumb.
So, what sorts of treatments did you undergo before the implantation, if any?
Really, there was really none. The problem with myself was just that the fluid wouldn't drain out of my ears. The only way to relieve that was with the implantation. Once that was done, it cleared up the hearing in my ears, but it still left a lot of people think, like, oh, you can hear now. Everything's cured, and now you're fine. That's not how it works. As soon as you're able to hear, that's great, but it's not like someone comes along with a how-to guide on this is how you should hear and this is where you should be now. Meaning that for the rest of my life, I had to undergo speech therapy almost on a daily basis. My parents were really good that way. They made sure to keep me going, to keep me motivated. I later on in life, I developed some of my own issues, opposed to the hearing impairment. It was discovered that I was dyslexic. So I had problems hearing, I had problems speaking, I had problems reading, I had problems writing. So for me, I was always that dumb kid in the corner who never wanted to raise his hand, who never, ever wanted to be picked on for reading, and the last thing I wanted to do was stand in front of a classroom and try to speak. Those were my terrors. Like, I used to get sweats sitting in school just thinking about, oh my God, it's going around, they're going to ask me to read next. And, like, I would panic and freak out. It didn't help the reading or writing at all, but it's really been a process for me. The thing that I try to get out to everyone is that don't think that just because someone may have had a surgery or maybe they got some percentage of their hearing back, that now that everything's fine, that person has a different choice, or not a different choice, that person has a different path in their life that they have to walk. So for me, it's always been trying to, like, let people know that, you know, that kid who doesn't like to read, that kid who maybe can't write so well, you know, he might be able to speak. He might be able to talk in tongues. He might be able to lay out some sick rhymes. But if you don't get to know that kid and you just think, oh, that kid's just some dummy in the corner, you're never going to get to find that out. And for the kids that are seen in the corner that don't want to raise their hand, don't let any of that affect you. Just keep working it. I know myself, it wasn't until I was about 15 or 16 until I even got confident enough to speak in front of a group setting. So for me, if I have one thing to put out there, it's just don't give up, and no matter what, don't listen to what they tell you that you can't do. Because when I was first diagnosed and when I first started going through everything, if you would have told my parents, my speech therapist, or anybody that knew me, that one day I was going to be on stage, that one day I was going to be rocking CDs and touring across Canada and the U.S., they never would have believed you, and it would have been the farthest thing from everybody's mind. But if you got a dream and you stick with it, it doesn't really matter what obstacles get put in your path. You just got to keep overcoming.
So, in your career and your music, is there any one success moment that stands out for you?
Well, for myself, because I'm an independent artist, the biggest moment for success, actually, I have to say, probably happened most recently. A lot of people, they want to link up, you know, the big names that they've opened for, and, you know, I've opened for some pretty big names, but at the same point in time, I really didn't know that I made it until I booked my last tour, because, again, it's all independent, so I don't have a booking agent, I don't have a manager, I find a club, and I pretty much call it up, and I say, hey, what's up, my name's Daly. Pretty much for me, I knew I made it on this last tour when I was able to book all across Canada. No problems. Everybody was more than happy to have me and was welcoming me. So to be able to go out to all the different cities across Canada and have the people come out and show me love, to myself, that's what I wanted to do. That's where I wanted to be to make it. So that would be my big moment, is probably this pass towards being able to go around Canada and see everybody that's really supporting me, has really backed me in these last few years.
So if you could send any one message about the role that music plays in the life of a person with a disability, what would it be?
That's really tough for me. Like I said, I was always that kid who never wanted to speak. So my coping mechanism was I used to grab a Walkman, and I used to pump it up as loud as it could go. And after the Walkman, I went to a Discman, early 90s, right? Yeah. So I used to just pump that up as loud as it could go. And I did that on purpose so people could see, like, I couldn't hear them, so they wouldn't talk to me. It pretty much was a coping mechanism for me to get people away from me. But at the same point in time, the music became my only salvation, too, because it's the thing that talked to me. It's the thing that kept me going day after day. I'd listen to, like, myself. I have a lot of different, even though I do rap and hip-hop, I have a lot of musical influences. I used to listen to a lot of older classic rock, and a lot of that music really spoke to me, and it told me, don't give up, don't give in. A lot of that probably comes out of my music, as that I try to normally be, if not more positive in a message, I try to at least lay it out, the facts, as in, like, how life really is.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
That'd be awesome. I'd be more than happy to.
All right. Daly went on to mention one of his songs was dedicated to the Hearing Society. You can check out some of his work at Daly204 on YouTube. Music's an amazing thing in the way it can affect a person with a disability. You might assume if somebody has a hearing impairment, for example, they wouldn't be able to fully appreciate what it really means to experience music. Our old friend Sean Forbes, a deaf rapper, takes such great enjoyment from his work. He's really adding something, not just to disabilities culture, but to culture in general, through his music, through expressing what's important to him. That's what music is, folks. It's a gift of expression. And every person, whether they have a disability or not, has the same right and the same need to express themselves. True, we all choose our own different outlet, and we all have different skills, but music is a universal language. It can affect each person differently. It can touch a person's heart, it can make them feel exhilarated and strong, comfort us when we're upset. It can just change our whole outlook. My own case, I found that music has gotten me through some of the most difficult moments in my life. When I was first recovering from the stroke I had as a child, it was a particular song I always used to request. The song always made me smile. Got me through some of the hardest times. But that's what music does. That's why there are organizations devoted to working with individuals with disabilities through music therapy. Now, for example, this can have a profound impact on individuals affected by autism. It can help them take that first step towards communication. I've heard this story many times, but it never ceases to amaze me that this is a tool that can be used not just to bring enjoyment to a person's life, but to help them reach out very, very meaningful way. You always hear the stories of someone with a hearing impairment being able to feel the vibrations in the music. I tend to believe this is definitely the case. A few years ago, I had the great privilege of interviewing Marley Matlin, a woman who was a previous contestant on Dancing with the Stars. Quite a skilled performer, one might add. She has a hearing impairment. Really, she was able to go very well in time with the music. Fact is, you should never underestimate the resourcefulness or the skill the human body when it comes to life with a disability. Fact is, if something isn't done in one way, nature will find a way to compensate. A person with a disability will experience all they can. It's just a question of how. They will accomplish all they can. Again, just a question of how. It's true, understanding of disability life begins with a simple question. What can we do to improve this situation? What steps can we take to improve the quality of life, provide some hope, some opportunity for a person with a disability? What opportunity would I myself like given to me? And how can I extend such a chance to someone else? Truth is, in society, those who have a gift of any kind, including those with disabilities, I've always felt they have just the obligation to use their skills, their talents, for the betterment of all in society. Working together, we can improve the quality of life. We can improve the opportunities granted to us all. The key is understanding that one step forward isn't just to benefit the disabled community. It can benefit us all. Look at a piece of technology, like a GPS system. It provides direction when you're out in the community. Yes, this can be beneficial for able-bodied members of society, but for someone with a vision impairment, it can be especially useful because there's an audio readout, a set of directions given. Especially in an unfamiliar neighborhood, this can be of great benefit. Both able-bodied and disabled methodologies and innovations really do play off each other. They really learn from each other. Take, for example, the wheelchair. Initially used simply as a method of providing those with paralysis to get around. But through athletic competitions, people have countless times asked the question, how can we make it more maneuverable? How can we make it faster? How can we enable this to become something more advanced than it is now? And that question is the hallmark of disability life. Performing artists ask this question all the time. They look at the issues in society, they see what's going on in the world, and it affects them. And many times, they take that, they express themselves. But it's artists like Sam and like Daly who can bring the spin to it that says, these are how these issues affect the community at large. But I want to see how this affects the disabled community. I want to give them a voice, a little bit of representation. Being out there, doing this remarkable thing, not because I have a disability, but because I can do that. Because I am a person who's recognized my skills and my talents, and I'm unafraid to stand alongside anyone else expressing their gifts. That's the great tragedy in disability life, folks. When a person with a disability has a remarkable talent to share, whatever it might be, and they don't want to get out there to use it, make things better for themselves or others, not to add to society. The fact that they might say to themselves, the world might look at me differently because I hear a little differently or see a little differently. It's important that society know about this diversity, these differences. Enlightenment doesn't come from the same thing over and over again. Different perspectives, different ideals. That's what it's all about. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.